Discourse on We the People, But Who Are We? By Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 1, Part 1. While doing some research for an article on the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, I ran across a rather enlightening revelation. There was a case that I had gone over many times before with other objectives in mind, but I realized this time that it very succinctly addressed just who we the people are. That we the people, of course, is the one that's mentioned in the preamble to the Constitution. Now, most of us will assume that any citizen of the United States is one of we the people. I must admit that until recently, I too believed this to be the case. Regardless of the political correctness of this assumption, we must understand that the law is what it was intended to be, not what we might want it to be. There is only one means by which that can be changed, and that is the amendment process defined in Article 5 of the Constitution. So, here is what was revealed to us by the Supreme Court of the United States with regard to a definitive answer to the question, who are we? The case is Dred Scott v. Sanford at 60 U.S. 393, and the decision was rendered in 1856. As recently as 10 years before the 14th Amendment was submitted to the states by the Congress, an historical and often referred to case was heard by the Supreme Court. Scott was born a slave in Missouri. As such, he was not a citizen of the United States. His owner laid hands on Scott, his wife, and children. Scott sued Sanford for assault. Scott was awarded his freedom by a St. Louis County, Missouri Circuit Court. The case was appealed to the state Supreme Court and reversed. The Circuit Court then reheard the case. Scott made exception to the instruction to the jury. The jury then ruled against Scott based upon the exception. The case eventually ended up in the Supreme Court. In its decision, the court pointed out that Scott had claimed to be a citizen of Missouri, which would give him standing to sue Sanford. It found that though Scott was not a citizen of Missouri or of the United States, that standing for the federal court to hear the case was based upon the court's acting on the fact that the question of citizenship was not in the plea that brought the matter before the court. You will see that even though Scott had no standing, the court decided to hear the case anyway. If you do not challenge jurisdiction, Sanford's obligation, the court may assume jurisdiction, the laws of the land notwithstanding. Chief Justice Taney delivered the opinion of the court from the decision. That plea denies the right of the plaintiff to sue in a court of the United States for the reasons therein stated. If the question raised by it is legally before us, and the court should be of opinion that the facts stated in it disqualify the plaintiff from becoming a citizen, in a sense in which that word is used in the Constitution of the United States, then the judgment of the Circuit Court is erroneous and must be reversed. It is suggested, however, that this plea is not before us, and that as the judgment in the court below on this plea was in favor of the plaintiff, he does not seek to reverse it or bring it before the court for revision by his writ of error, and also that the defendant waived his defense by pleading over and thereby admitted the jurisdiction of this court. Since the matter of citizenship was not in the plea that brought the matter before the court will not rule on Scott's standing. However, the court now finds that it is a form to define just what a citizen is, a point that had only been addressed in rather ambiguous terms in the Constitution and not since addressed by the Congress or the court. Taney goes on to ask this important question from the decision. Can a Negro, whose ancestors were imported into this country and sold as slaves, become a member of the political community formed and brought into existence by the Constitution of the United States, and as such become entitled to all the rights and privileges and immunities guaranteed by that instrument to the citizen. The only matter in issue before the court, therefore, is whether the descendants of such slaves, when they shall be emancipated, or who are born of parents who had become free before their birth, are citizens of a state, in the sense in which the word citizen is used in the Constitution of the United States. So, while this decision covers many aspects and many ways of addressing the question, I will provide only those that are concise and indicative of the sense of the court and the decisions held to. Remember as you read that this decision predates the 14th Amendment. From the decision, the words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They are what we familiarly call sovereign citizens, and every citizen is one of this people and a constituent member of this sovereignty. The question before us is whether the class of persons described in the plea in abatement compose a portion of this people and are constituent members of this sovereignty. We think they are not, and that they are not included and were not intended to be included under the word citizen in the Constitution, and can therefore claim none of the rights and privileges which that instrument provides for and secures to citizens of the United States. On the contrary, they were, at that time, considered as a subordinate and inferior class of beings who had been subjugated by the dominant race, and whether emancipated or not, yet remained subject to their authority and had no right or privileges, but such as those who held the power and the government might choose to grant them. Well, there is an interesting phrase used in this discussion of the 14th Amendment by the Senate, remain subject to their authority. So back to the decision. In discussing this question, we must not confound the rights of citizenship which a state may confer within its own limits and the rights of citizenship as a member of the Union. It does not by any means follow, because he has all the rights and privileges of a citizen of a state, that he must be a citizen of the United States. He may have all the rights and privileges of the citizen of a state and yet not be entitled to the rights and privileges of a citizen of any other state. For previous to the adoption of the Constitution of the United States, every state had the undoubted right to confer on whomsoever it pleased the character of citizen and to endow him with all its rights. But this character, of course, was confined to the boundaries of the state and gave him no rights or privileges in other states beyond those secured to him by the laws of nations and the comity of states. Nor have the several states surrendered the power of conferring these rights and privileges by adopting the Constitution of the United States. Each state may still confer them upon an alien or anyone it thinks proper, or upon any class or description of person. Yet he would not be a citizen in the sense in which that word is used in the Constitution of the United States, nor entitled to sue as such in one of its courts, nor to the privileges and immunities of a citizen in the other states. The rights which he would acquire would be restricted to the state which gave them. The Constitution has conferred on Congress the right to establish an uniform rule of naturalization, and this right is evidently exclusive and has always been held by this court to be so. Consequently, no state, since the adoption of the Constitution, can, by naturalizing an alien, invest him with rights and privileges secured to a citizen of a state under the federal government. Although, so far as the state alone was concerned, he would undoubtedly be entitled to the rights of a citizen, and clothed with all the rights and immunities which the Constitution and laws of that state attach to that character. It is very clear, therefore, that no state can, by any act or law of its own, passed since the adoption of the Constitution, introduce a new member into the political community created by the Constitution of the United States. It cannot make him a member of this community by making him a member of its own. And for that same reason, it cannot introduce any person or description of persons who were not intended to be embraced in this new political family, which the Constitution brought into existence, but were intended to be excluded from it. The question then arises whether the provisions of the Constitution in relation to the personal rights and privileges to which the citizen of a state should be entitled embrace the Negro African race at that time in this country, or who might afterwards be imported, who had then or should afterwards be made free in any state, and to put it in the power of a single state to make him a citizen of the United States and endow him with the full rights of citizenship in every other state without their consent. Does the Constitution of the United States act upon him whenever he shall be made free under the laws of a state, and raised there to the rank of a citizen, and immediately clothe him with all the privileges of a citizen in every other state and in its own courts? The court think the affirmative of these propositions cannot be maintained. And if it cannot, the plaintiff in error could not be a citizen of the state of Missouri within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States, and consequently was not entitled to sue in its courts. It is true, every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states became also citizens of the new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, and who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded. It was the union of those who were at the time members of distinct and separate political communities into one political family, whose power for certain specified purposes was to extend over the whole territory of the United States, and it gave to each citizen rights and privileges outside of his state which he did not before possess, and placed him in every other state upon a perfect equality with its own citizens as to rights of persons and rights of property. It made him a citizen of the United States. Well, that makes pretty clear who could not be a citizen of the United States.